be, I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
Don't worry, I know how to handle things.
Okay, you got it.
Oh, whoa. Oh, I... Okay, no, that's not what I'm talking about.
You are listening to a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. Any opinions expressed within are solely those of the participants and do not reflect the views of WRCT Radio Incorporated. Questions and comments can be addressed to the Public Affairs Director.
Wow, somehow technical difficulties.
Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, a talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Wow, you gotta love internet radio. And you gotta love my crazy day thanks to the BlackBerry. But I want to thank Verizon Wireless for finally helping me to finally make me buy a $429 phone and give me the discount to $50. That's ridiculous. For a BlackBerry? Come on now, I should buy an iPhone. But again, this is Neil Haley, the Total Tutor. And I've been having trouble charging my BlackBerry, and I can't live without a cell phone, and it's been almost a day, and it's been craziness, but I want to thank all the guests that are going to be coming to the show today. But again, go to my website at www.totaltutor.org to access podcasts, my show, read my blog, and learn more about the Total Tutor. But I want to welcome two guests today, and I'm going to put Rob on the line as well, so Rob can at least listen to know he's on the line. But I'm going to first welcome my major guest, and my major guest meaning because this is his idea. This is what he believes. Rob Roselli, thanks for calling the program tonight. And again, you're ready to debate a bunch of pro-evolution people.
Yeah, how you doing, Neil? And thanks for having me again.
Well, Rob, this is going to be very interesting. I just believe it because I kind of have a surprise for you because you couldn't get a bunch of people. I got after the half hour, after you debate Steve, you're going after the top science doctors that are, I guess, really big time. So, again, I think Steve's big time, but everyone's big time. But I want to welcome the Poison Ivy guy, Steve Greenspan, to the program. How are you, Steve?
Good evening. How are you doing?
So,
I'm doing fine.
So, Steve, you guys had a heated debate last time, you and Rob, and you guys were going back and forth. So now, I guess, here are the rules for tonight's debate. And it's basically, I'm going to kind of rate it based on content. We cannot repeat ourselves over and over again. Even though Rob gave a great question that no one can answer, Rob, you understand that you have to have your talking points for this one, correct?
Sure.
Okay. All right, so let's go ahead. Here's the rules. Basically, you get 3 minutes each to start out why evolution or why not evolution. And again, we're going to talk about it based on education schools. But we're going to the thing we're trying to battle and we're trying to figure out, is evolution truly a theory that should be taught in schools? Is evolution true? And meaning true scientifically that, guess what, it's something, or is it something that evangelicals out there believe is false, you shouldn't teach it. And going back to a topic, Rob, that I sent out as a kind of publicizing you other places, the whole thing that Tennessee teachers, there is a bill going to be passed that science teachers in Tennessee don't have to teach evolution if they don't want to, anti-evolutionists and anti-evolutions. So basically, that's kind of what's leading into this whole thing. It keeps coming up on the front page. And Steve, have you seen that as well in the education blogs? More and more people don't want to teach evolution.
Yeah, no, I've caught that. And I think that's part of the religious right's way of sneaking in their own hidden agenda.
And that's, again, we're going to find out why not. But we're going to start out with our guest, meaning that this show is all about Rob, because Rob came to me talking about global warming. Now we're in evolution. So why should we, and you have 3 minutes starting right now at about 10:04, why should we not teach evolution? Tell me why, Rob.
Well, basically, as I stated last time on the last debate, at best, it is a colossal waste of time. It has nothing to do with sound science. And as we went and kept repeating ourselves and repeating myself with the five guests, nobody could answer the simplest application of Newton's first law of motion as it applies to the Big Bang. And I'd like to correct myself, by the way. As far as the Big Bang, I was describing it as a point of singularity or an atom or whatever point of infinite smallness started the whole universe. I was actually incorrect, believe it or not. The actual person that developed the so-called Big Bang Theory was actually using it in a mocking term, an English astronomer by the name of Fred Hoyle, who actually believed in like some kind of mass or void or cosmic void that was out there that created the universe, not a point of singularity. How you make that distinction between, you know, what's the difference when it comes to trying to prove which is which, is beyond me. But anyway, it's interesting that none of the of my five opponents called me on that blatant mistake in the description of the original Big Bang Theory, since it's supposed to be about science. That's a pretty big miss on their part, so maybe we can get into an explanation of that at some point. So basically, what it comes down to is that the first and second laws of thermodynamics, nor Newton's three laws of motion, do not apply in outer space, because I could not get a specific scientific or mathematical answer to any of the questions that I posed last time. But I did get a lot of responses about the so-called fossil record and this sort of thing. So I invite my guest tonight to bring up combinations of fossils and animals in the so-called geologic columns throughout the world. I want to hear some examples of transitional fossils. I mean, one example that I've come across is something called Archaeopteryx. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but anyway, it is a bird supposedly evolving into a dinosaur, and it was around for 125 years before scientists figured out that it was not, in fact, a transitional fossil between a bird and a dinosaur. But I'm sure either Steve or any one of the other guests that's coming on later in the show can describe for me some combinations. You know, the combinations are endless. I mean, we can have a horse's head on a man, something, you know, with horns on it, perhaps maybe a human-fish combination,
a
dog head
up,
on
Rob.
A human.
So basically time is going to be – okay, so that's your time. So basically the question he's asking, Steve, is about the whole thing about fossils. And how would you respond to his statement on fossils?
My statement on fossils, as far as the evolutionary trend, is that there's replete history – going through all the ages, that there's been a succession of evolution from one organism morphing into another. Some will go first morph, and then others will go extinct. But in either way, there's always been, call it a hybridization, if you will, either it's a crossbreeding or an evolutionary scale that takes place, so that the lesser organism evolves into a higher functioning organism and leaving some of the lesser traits behind due to survival of the fittest. So that you have the originally, to Rob's point, as far as something that would be a dinosaur laying an egg, okay, and then morphing into, let's say it was ground-based, then morphing into a bird, so now the bird is laying the egg. So that would be an evolutionary scale. It's got nothing to do with creationism, as he was, I think, projecting last time around.
Okay, remember, we're not allowed to talk about godness, so keep going. You still have 2 minutes if you want to.
So I mean, to the point about the universe and the Big Bang theory, the universe has forever been expanding from the inception of time. There's no way that anybody, regardless of whoever their scientific background is, can establish a point positive when the universe first came to be by major explosion or fission or nuclear reaction or whatever it was that first took place, because there was nobody there. That's speculative at best, but through scientific principle, they de-engineer or reverse-engineer what's presently before them to arrive at answers that are pretty much solidly based in fundamental science and physics. So the universe has been expanding since the beginning of time, continues to expand, and much of the expansion that's taking place happened millions and millions and millions of years ago, which we're first coming to realize now by actually being able to view it more or less like in a time warp, because we're seeing history that goes back millions of years, but we're first catching glimpses of it now because of the physics of light and travel and time sequence that all play into it. So evolution is an ongoing thing that requires fundamental understanding of basic science, but even much more advanced than that, is the laws of physics, space and time travel and things of that nature, perceptions of speeds of light, all function and play into what we're talking about here. And you need to have those understandings to fully comprehend what we're talking about. Otherwise, it just gets lost in a muck and a mire,
okay,
just a bunch of words getting bounced around.
All right. All right, time up. So basically what Rob, he's saying so far, as I'm taking notes, because, again, this is not my expertise, and TFT's in the chat room, and TFT's probably snickering. This is not education reform with our good friend Whitney Tilson. Basically, we hear some laughing. Basically, Rob, what he's stating is that basically the Big Bang Theory, it continues to evolve, that the world continues to evolve. And then he also talked about fossils that are true. Any response to any of those, Rob?
Well, first of all, I mean, I just stated at the top of the show, we spent an hour going around in circles, and we talk about the basic laws of physics. It doesn't get any more basic than Newton's first law. I know we're beating a dead horse here, and we're not supposed to be doing this, but nobody could come up with an experiment to reproduce the Big Bang in relation to something such as the planets revolving around the sun, as we all know they do, in a perpetual circular/elliptical orbit. So I don't understand why, you know, he's alluding to the laws of physics. We established that Newton's and the laws of thermodynamics do not exist in outer space. They can't exist in outer space based on the evolutionary time scale. I mean, there's a million questions I can ask. I mean, the first one is, what is the age of the universe? I mean, I guess, as you're saying, we don't know, 4.5 billion, 13 billion, whatever. But what about the fact that with all these stars, which are suns out in the universe and traveling at the speed of light over 4.5 billion years, shouldn't they have lit up the entire universe, and shouldn't we have constant daylight here on Earth?
See, I like that. That's the one question, and he wants to go right to Steve. How would you respond to that question, Steve?
Well, should we have constant light on Earth? And what was the other second half of that question, just quickly?
Okay, good, Rob.
Well, basically, light travels 186,000 miles per second, okay? And if the universe is 4.5 billion, and the ranges vary. I mean, if you can't figure something out, you just bury it with time. I mean, that's the evolutionist mantra. But, you know, whatever the number is, pick a number between 4 and 13 billion, and just tell me at 186,000 miles per second, the closest star, tell me how far the closest star is besides our sun, and should not have that light have arrived here, that we would just have sunlight 24 hours a day from all the stars.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I'm not clear on what he's getting at, because obviously the sun does shine 24 hours a day. It's the rotation of the planet that makes you have day and night to begin with. Any other extraneous light that's filtering through the solar system or the universe at this point in time, some of it we don't know whether it's still whether the solar star itself is still alive, or if it's dead and exploded or burned out billions of years ago, and we're just catching glimpses of the pulsing light now. And only astrophysicists can really possibly answer that question, and not even with a certain degree of accuracy, because there's still lots of things that remain unknown. I mean, pulsations vary in frequency and intensity, which can be measured, and then they can, again, de-engineer or reverse engineer the pulsations using various degrees of mathematics, what have you, to figure out if, in fact, that pulsing light still is a live star or a dead star or an exploding star, or not even a star at all. It may come from extraneous sources that may be not even familiar to mankind in the precept or construct of a sun. There are lots of things that we don't know yet that are first coming into being, and I think a lot of it has got to do with the mindset of the scientific world and how they perceive things. There's a certain degree of paradigm there where guys who want to be scientifically responsible and want to be acknowledged have to perform to certain paradigms. Otherwise, they get looked at like they're drinking some kind of funny Kool-Aid. And then they lose all credibility, and then their careers are shot. So you have a double-edged sword that's working against you in certain aspects in this whole conversation.
So what I'm seeing, Steve, is that you really didn't answer the question. How do we know that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old? And then also, why wouldn't the whole world be 24 hours of daylight, not just the sun, meaning we all know it rotates with the Earth. We're talking about the question of if we were in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, it'd be 24 hours of sunlight. I'm just being a journalist, as TFT's already attacking me on the chat, Steve, if you were able to go check that out, because TFT just loves me after the Whitney Tilson thing. But the fact is, the fact of the matter, and I'm going to tell you this right now, is I'm going to ask the questions because Rob is asking that question. Do you know for certain, through scientific theory, because we're going to have other people on later on, that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old, and why, if that's true, that the whole we don't have 24 hours of sunlight? Can you answer that question, or should Rob continue?
Actually, at the poles, they do have 24 hours of sunlight. Okay, right? So it's just a question of where you exist on the global scale, because of the angle of declination or inclination that determines that. And as far as the universe being 4.5 billion years old, I believe they use to a certain degree they're using it's the actual aging, it's the age of the light that reaches the planet that determines the age of the point of origin where they determine they're going back in time how old the universe is. It's really doing a time travel backwards to when the light first was created, and they're able to map that out quantitatively.
Okay, so that's the answer to your question. So, Rob, response.
Well, first of all, I mean, you know, the sun lights up the north and the south pole, so I mean, I'm supposed to be the flat earther here, I guess, but what you're saying is that the Earth is some kind of old television set that just looks one way towards the sun, so there's no stars like surrounding the Earth in a 360-degree fashion to bring this light that we're talking about, first of all. And another question I have is, you know, this point of singularity or this pool of stuff or matter or hydrogen or whatever it was that Fred Hoyle came up with before he mockingly called his own theory the Big Bang. What about the uneven density of materials coming out of the Big Bang? I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, we've really established you can't solve Newton's first law of motion with the Big Bang, okay? Because things are going off in linear paths, and at the same time, other things like Earth are in elliptical orbits. And I'm back to that point again. So, you know, that's basic high school physics, and we're already on to, you know, advanced astrophysics. But what about this question of density of materials coming out of this Big Bang? It's just stuff just kind of exploded.
Rob, I think to your point, I mean, you talk about various densities, and if I recall correctly, they bring in the concept or construct of a black hole theory, which is supposed to be the densest thing known to mankind in the universe, which to me exists as a negative hole. So how do you explain the densest thing in the universe being a hole that you can actually enter into, but still being the densest thing compared to a solid, if you're thinking of it in terms of that? You know, it becomes scientific fact, not even scientific fact, scientific events that are taking place that without the premise of underlying science behind you, it's a very hard construct to comprehend for the average person. I talk about some of these things with people who have less to no scientific background, and they look at me like, what are you talking about? What are you drinking? Because without having the abstract fundamental in your head, it's very hard to comprehend what we're talking about. So by you mentioning, you know, the density factor, you have to understand what a black hole is first and where black holes originate from or out of. And that some of the stuff is due to polarization. We're dealing with gaseous states and greater degrees of gravity or anti-gravity and other things, nuclear fission, all taking place in outer space that most people don't comprehend. And it all goes into making what we're talking about here today on both sides, your side of the argument as well as mine.
And the question I have to ask is why do we have this side of the argument? Because I am seeing from the chat room that TFT says he's debating reality. So the frustrated teachers have throwing some digs at you right now, Rob, in the chat room. So that's one thing you'll have to remember to sign up on the chat room the next time you come on the show. because that's a great forum to debate some of the people in the studio audience, and I guess that's TFT for you. But the fact is, I'm hearing what Steve's saying. Steve's talking about black holes. Can you come back with a response to the black hole theory?
Well, the operative word being theory. You know, I ask a specific question, and you get another theory. All right, and these people out there saying, you know, I'm out of touch with reality or whatever, you know, I invite you, if you're in high school, go to your high school physics teacher and ask them to reproduce the Big Bang Theory in a lab, just like you have chemistry labs and other kind of physics labs and electrical engineering labs, explode something and have those pieces go in an elliptical orbit. I'm trying to keep this simple and basic. I do not know a lot about black hole theory, except that it is a theory, and they create such a vacuum that they actually bend light. They're such a powerful entity that if one were to come near the Earth in theory, it would actually suck out the Earth's atmosphere and light itself. And if you affect light, then you affect time. Okay, and I'm not. Beyond that, I'm not that familiar with it. But again, it is a theory. So you just have another theory to answer a question, a legitimate question. So again, what are we really talking about here? We're talking about scientific fact, or we're talking about theory on top of another theory.
So well, I think. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, to Rob's point, I'm gonna quote something that's in Wikipedia. A black hole is a region of space from which nothing, not even light, can escape. The theory of general relativity predicts that a sufficiently compact mass will deform space-time to form a black hole. Around a black hole, there is an undetectable surface called an event horizon that marks the point of no return. It is called a black because it absorbs all the light that hits the horizon, reflects nothing, just like a perfect black body. And thermodynamic quantum mechanics predicts that black holes emit radiation, and goes on and on.
Response to Wikipedia.
So again, but it's a theory. So my question is, and let's try and keep this on a level that we can all understand. And, you know, as I admit, and I have admitted, I'm no astrophysicist, okay, but the problem is, how are these voids or these vacuums of energy, the black holes themselves, how are they created? I mean, how are they created? So in other words, you have this instantaneous expanse or an explosion, okay, of matter going in infinite directions, some of it linear, some not linear, some elliptical orbits, all in contradiction to Newton's laws of motion. Okay,
but
gravity.
That's got nothing to do with the topic. That's got nothing to do with what we're discussing.
I'm asking you, tell me. It's black hole theory. So how did the black hole form from an outward the outward momentum of the Big Bang?
Fine. Let me just quote something. I'm going to continue quoting Wikipedia. Black hole, without getting into the whole litany of what's there, I'm picking out the choice pieces. Black holes of stellar mass are expected to form when heavy stars collapse in a supernova, which is a super grand explosion, at the end of their stellar life cycle. After a black hole is formed, it can continue to grow by absorbing mass from the surroundings. By absorbing other stars and merging with other black holes, supermassive black holes of millions of solar masses may be formed. So a black hole is really the construct of a star or a supernova at the end of its life cycle. That's how it's formed.
Okay, Steve, I have to interject. I'm saying I've heard of black holes, and I believe in a black hole, and I don't consider it a theory. I want to know why Rob thinks it's a theory.
Well, maybe he's misled me. I mean, we have to ask Rob that. I don't know why either. You know, I get misled when I hear the theory because it's not a theory. Black hole is a scientific principle that guys will stand behind. Science community stands behind it.
Okay, response, Rob.
Well, it's not – look, the black hole themselves, I mean, whether it's proven or not proven, as far as I know, one has never been observed. And is it mathematically provable? Maybe. But then my question
is – To your point, then, I'm gonna cut you for a minute. Astronomers have identified numerous black hole candidates in binary systems by studying their interaction with their companion stars. Go ahead.
Well, my question is, how much, you know, we're back to the original, what happened to all this missing mass coming out of the super dense Big Bang? I mean, how much of the mass did the black holes suck up? I mean, you're just...
Everything.
You have infinite. So basically, they're out there, and if you don't know where the mass went, well, it went into a black hole. That's basically what you're saying.
That's true. There are growing consensus that supermassive black holes exist in the centers of most galaxies. In particular, there is strong evidence of a black hole of more than 4 million solar masses at the center of our Milky Way, and that's just one galaxy.
Okay. So, Rob, I think, honestly, and we got 5 minutes left with Steve, and then I guess I'm bringing in the big guns in a way, because Steve really has put this whole black hole thing. I think we need to take it out because it is not a theory. And maybe, Rob, in the next debate when you have your other expert come on with you, because I think Steve's willing to sign that challenge, aren't you, Steve? The guy
yep,
that I
absolutely.
Sent that email. I wish we would have been able to figure it out earlier, Rob, but now I do have your telephone number because I'm kind of working to help you get out there, other places booked. So basically, because again, you have a very interesting story. The fact I'm going to say right now, and this is the bottom line, is your guy might be able to come back with this whole black hole thing. So with 3 minutes left, Rob, I want to hear Steve talk about fossils. He's given this whole black hole theory, so he ends the whole idea. So basically, Steve, just to kind of understand this, you have a black hole that kind of sucks up some of the light from making this the universe 4.5 billion years old, correct?
It's the light and the energy, yes.
Okay. Just, again, this is not it. If we're debating social studies or the Catholic Church, then I would have knowledge. But this is something where I'm really enthralled in learning about this. So, Steve, you provide some great information. And now I'm finally hearing the evolution, the anti-evolution side. So let's go with Rob, don't you agree with 3 minutes left with Steve? He's not answered the question on fossils, correct, that you brought up?
No. No, I mean,
okay.
So the question, again, is you're looking to explain how the evolutionary process takes place within fossils?
No, I want to go to a museum and see a fossil, you know, like a human head on a horse body, or a horse body on a horse head on a human, or a fish fossil or something like that. I want to see proof. I want to see the fossil record.
You're never going to see that. But you know, if you go to any museum today, that's the most absurd thing. That's created in a dream in a horror movie or a sci-fi flick. The reality is that a man's head will never exist on the body of a horse. It's like saying Equus became a man. What's the name of the half horse, half man?
Minotaur.
Has a torso. Sorry?
Minotaur from Greek mythology. Because that's really what we're talking about here.
Right, exactly. And that's what it is. It's mythology, but it never has yet to have been proven to exist in the history of the world in terms of fossil, you know, harvesting. But there is an evolutionary time scale, no matter what the species. All you have to do is look back to the beginning of time, to the simplest organelle that evolved into higher functioning multicellular organisms, till we have complex structures that involve millions of cells functioning at different levels that divide themselves into specific functions based upon organelles and body parts. So it's just a question of where you are in the spectrum of life as we know it in the universe, basically on our planet right now, because that's all we have to go on or go by to critique. So for you
so there's no evolutionary fossils is what you're saying.
Evolutionary fossils is to go there. No, but there are all fossils are evolutionary. That's the point. I don't have the names of dinosaurs per se at the tip of my tongue, but within a given species of dinosaur, there's been an evolvement where the tail would first be a long tail and then it would shorten, and maybe they walked on fours and now they're on twos and the tail shortens more and the length of the upper torso diminishes or the strength of the jaw increases, so that he went from herbivore to carnivore and so on. So that's an evolutionary scale that you go to any museum, you'll see it. The timeline is there.
What timeline will I see? So in other words, I mean, but humans evolved from what? From bacteria or fish or what? What did we evolve from? So there's billions of years of evolution, and there's not one like half human, half fish fossil. I don't understand.
If you're looking for the missing link between that links mankind back to prehistoric dinosaur, I don't know that you're going to find that. I mean, certainly it's going to go back. Homo sapiens is going to go back to prehistoric caveman, certainly. If you're looking for the nexus between the monkey kingdom and Homo sapien, okay, there have been various fossils that have been found, and I think it was, I forget what country it was in right now, but it was supposed to be the closest thing found to date in postmodern society that would draw inference that mankind came from this subset species of primitive ape.
Okay.
Lack of a better term. All right. So then why are we still around, or why are apes still around? If it's survival of the fittest, and how did we evolve for them, yet they're still around?
Okay, that's a good question. I guess Steve can answer that before our next caller comes on, because until we get the next caller, we can keep it going, Steve, for a couple more seconds, and you'll tell us more information
sure.
on you. And especially, I really want to debate you someday on the organic thing. My just giving you a kind of heads up, I think some of this is bunk, the organic thing. So I want to kind of find somebody that might disagree with organic and bring them on against you. I would love it, because, again, I don't like having to pay more on milk and meat and everything because my wife forces me to buy that, but okay.
Well, there was some late-breaking news that came out, and I'm not going to get into it now, that pertains to all the more reason, more compelling reason why you want to go organic. But we'll save that for another rainy day. As far as pesticide use goes with the production of food crops for consumption. But
okay.
just to get back to the dinosaur primitive evolutionary thing, there was a big fiasco many, many years ago where somebody found, I believe it was the head of a skull of a primitive monkey ape family, and supposedly had the jawbone of a humanoid interjected into the skull. So at first the scientists, not knowing that this was a hoax, said this could be the cross-link between mankind and ape because it had a human-like jaw. Not knowing that someone had planted that in, and then they debunked that whole myth after going off on tangents and, you know, hypocrisy and all kinds of things. Some people thought the scientists were actually crazy and were going to condemn them to, you know, lifetime in prison for espousing such, you know, baloney. But eventually it was discovered that it was a fake. It was a fraud. Someone was playing a game on scientific community. But to my knowledge, there are many fossils that exist out there in all species. I mean, look at the snake that slithers on the ground today. Years ago, that snake had legs. Okay, and I don't know what lineage it comes from, you know, in terms of, you know, the Latin names, but you look at Google it and you'll find it.
The snake had legs.
Okay, now Steve, where can we find more information on you?
Beg pardon?
Where can we find more information on you?
Oh, like, more information? Okay, well, my website is www.poisonivyremoval.com, and that's really the best way to what I have up there right now. If you need someone want to contact me or pass comment or what have you, that's the way to reach me through the website.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Steve. And again, I think that we couldn't really – this is kind of like round one of this big war of debates, because I have someone to be on your side next month, Steve. And I know, guess what? Steve's willing to take on the challenge of your guy, Rob, and he'll sign something, and the other guy will as well. So we will
promote that
for next month.
If we will, you know, I got just the agreement they can all sign, and then we'll have a, you know, then we'll have it.
Yeah, but we'll see.
Yeah,
I have to admit, you know, I'm a little taken aback by the black hole. I don't know a lot about them specifically, but that's not to say there's not a debate there, so I'm all for it.
Okay, debates are always open. Okay. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I was going to say what you need to do, Rob, as far as to put your head around the black hole theory is to do some reading on it, and you have to think outside the box. It's not something that's an easy concept to totally grab. It took me a while to read it and fully come to comprehending what the implication is and how it evolved and what it actually means in terms of present-day scientific principles.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. All right, thanks, Steve, for calling, and I really appreciate it. And you really put on a good representation of the evolution side. Let's see.
All right,
and I'm going to interview Rob for a couple minutes before the next person calls. So you can go and listen in the chat, Steve, and kind of sign up in the chat if you want to keep listening to the show. Go to blogtalkradio.com/TotalTutor if you want to continue to hear what Rob has to do when he's going against scientists next. I know I consider you scientist guy too, Steve, but these guys are PhD-level scientists, so it's going to be quite interesting.
Good. Well, I'm logging into your Total Tutor page right now.
Okay. It's blogtalkradio.com/TotalTutor. All right. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thanks, Neil.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, Rob.
Right.
Now,
thanks, Steve.
There's already a call ready for you. But I was saying something really quickly, and look out below. We have another caller. Okay. And it's 864 area code. Welcome to the Total Education Show. How are you? You're on the line.
Is this for me?
Yes, it's for, you're on the line. Your name is sir?
Okay, well, this is Kelly Smith from Clemson University. You'd ask me to call in. So.
Yeah, absolutely, Kelly. I've been having BlackBerry trouble, so I don't know who's calling. I set up people to call in. But, yeah,
okay.
I'm really into kind of craziness today. I'm glad we got people in. So, Kelly, basically I'm going to give you first. I don't know if you've been listening into the debate with Steve on the line.
No, not yet.
No, you've not. Okay. So, Kelly, I'm going to give the same question I gave to Rob. Okay, you're going to let Rob Roselli is an anti-evolutionist that believes evolution should not be taught in schools. You know what's going on with the whole big thing with in Tennessee, correct? Have you been, Kelly, following up on that? That the high school teachers,
sure.
Anti-evolution people, do not want to teach evolution in schools. So I wanted
right.
to ask you, is evolution truly a theory that should be taught and practiced in schools? So, Kelly, go ahead with your point and why evolution is true and should be taught.
Okay, well, I believe it should be taught because it's an excellent scientific theory. I think evolution is true not because I have a faith of any kind or even necessarily because I like it, but because there's a huge amount of scientific evidence for it. And on top of that, we need evolutionary theory to make sense of a lot of things in the world. We routinely make evolutionary predictions using modern theories, and then we prove those predictions to be true. Nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution. And it's not just biology. If we're wrong about evolution, which is at least theoretically possible, then we'd also be wrong about huge chunks of physics, chemistry, astronomy, anthropology, you name it. So it's probably one of the best confirmed scientific theories anyone's ever come up with, and that's why it should be taught in schools.
Okay, Rob. Response to his point.
Well, maybe you can educate me. You said confirmed scientific theory, so we have a confirmed, yet it's still a theory?
Well, the nature of theory in science is like this. People think, when you mention the word theory, that what you're talking about is something you pulled out of thin air. You know, it's like Bob has a theory about why Al-Qaeda is doing something. That's what normal people mean about theory. But when a scientist says something's a theory, that's actually a compliment. A theory is much more difficult to come up with than a fact. Anybody can come up with facts. You just make an observation and repeat that observation. That's a fact. But a theory is something which draws together a large body of facts in a way that makes them make sense. And theories are quite difficult to come up with in science. And there are lots of theories that people take for granted. Gravity is a theory. That doesn't mean that it's somehow unlikely to be true or there's no evidence for it, but it is nevertheless a theory. So, yes, evolution is a theory, just like gravity is, and lots of other theories.
Okay, Rob. Rob.
Okay.
Okay.
Gravity, as far as I know, is easily provable because we're all still glued here to the Earth.
Well, gravity makes predictions, right, that
okay.
we then verify. Like, gravity predicts that you won't go flying off into space, and you look down and you go, well, I'm not flying off into space. So it seems to me gravity is true. Right. That doesn't mean it's not a theory. That's just a confirmation of the theory. It's still theoretically possible that there's something fundamental wrong about the theory of gravity. Evolutionary theory does the same kind of thing. Evolutionary theory makes all kinds of predictions, and then those predictions are tested, and those predictions are conclusively found out to be true. It doesn't necessarily mean that evolution couldn't be wrong. I'm a philosopher as well as a biologist, so I'm willing to admit almost anything could be wrong in principle. But the more predictions you do over time and the more testing you do, the more convinced you are that your theory is actually correct. And evolutionary theory has enormous masses of evidence for it.
Go ahead, Rob.
Enormous masses of evidence. The gentleman I had on here the last half hour Well, first of all, I had five evolutionists on my first show, and not one of them could explain to me how the Big Bang or the outward explosion of particles from this point of singularity conforms to Newton's first law of motion. Now, that's a scientific law. As you said, ultimately it is a theory, but that gets into other philosophy debates. And then what is reality? If Newton's first law isn't true, then what is? But anyway, so I just went around and I could not get one answer of anybody to reproduce an experiment to get something to explode and have those particles somehow stop in midair and start, revolving around something the way the planets do around the Earth. And then just in this last half hour, I guess you weren't listening, but I tried to get an address of a museum where I can go and look at some evolutionary or some intermediate species between, whatever it is we evolved from and current day humans. And if you have an address of a museum, I'd like to go see it. As far as you say loads and loads of evidence, I don't see it. And let's talk about CERN over there in Europe. If we're so sure about the Big Bang theory, why do we need CERN? Why all this effort, intellectual effort, into producing something that's supposed to be random to begin with? I know that's like three separate questions, but I'll sit back and listen.
Well, let me answer the simplest one first. If you want the address of your museum, go to the American Museum of Natural History in New York. That's an excellent museum. But, pick any large city and find a natural history museum there, Smithsonian or whatever, and you can go there and find fossils of transitional forms. Now, you want to talk a little bit about... Yes, you can. Not a problem. In fact, they find new ones every day. Just about 3 months ago, they found a new hominid ancestor. So this is not... in any way controversial.
Okay, so finally Kelly brings that to the point, and I'm glad I found you, Kelly, because that's the first evidence that says that you can find an evolution type fossil in the museums. Great point. Just continue.
Well, I don't know who you've had on your shows in the past, but, this is not a weird claim. Anybody who knows a lot about evolution would think this is pretty straightforward. Now, the stuff you were talking about the Big Bang, In the first place, I wouldn't call that evolution. That's physics. That's a branch of astrophysics, and I'm not a physicist. So I have to be kind of careful what I say. I do know enough to know that when you're talking about the Big Bang and events surrounding the Big Bang, you're talking about a situation where Newtonian physics don't apply. And things like Newton's laws of motion are obviously part of Newtonian physics. So things get really, really complicated and highly theoretical when you're talking about these kinds of areas. So I don't think, though, that there's a real fundamental intuitive problem. That seems to be what you want, is you want sort of an intuitive explanation for something like how we could get elliptical orbits of planets, given that everything should be flying away from this initial explosion. Is that the gist of your question?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I can give you an intuitive sort of Newtonian account, and then you add in the caveats about I'm not a physicist and it's not really strictly Newtonian, but I think an analogy might work to give sort of an intuitive sense of how this could happen. So imagine you've got the singularity that led to the Big Bang, and we're going to represent that by saying we got a whole bunch of rubber balls, and these rubber balls are all smashed together in a very, very confined space under great pressure. Those rubber balls are supposed to represent, bits of matter, okay? And then each rubber ball has, say, a little string attached to it a couple of inches long, and that string is incredibly sticky. Imagine them as, Velcro strings or super glue strings or something like that. So you got this weird contraption, and it blows up. And so what you end up with is all these rubber balls coming out at great velocity from this initial point, right? It seems to be that your intuitive notion is, well, you'd expect each of these balls to fly in a perfectly straight line so that you'd be able over time to sort of imagine these balls all going in a perfectly straight line directly away from the initial explosion. But even using Newtonian physics, that seems to be clearly not what you'd expect, because the balls are so tightly compacted that when they come out of this, what's going to happen is the balls will jostle against each other and bounce around. That'll change their trajectories. And because they have these little strings, and the strings are meant to represent the gravitational attraction between bits of matter, right? So because they have these little strings, when two balls come close to each other, their strings can become entangled, and they can interact with each other. And so I ask people who are listening to this to imagine after this explosion if it would be impossible to conceive of, say, two rubber balls flying away from the explosion but rotating around each other because their little strings are attached to each other. That strikes me as perfectly intuitive, right? Now, it is true that they're moving away from the explosion, just like Everything in the universe is moving away from the point at which the Big Bang occurred right now. But it's also true that you can describe those things in other terms, like they're rotating around each other and they have various kinds of gravitational attractions between each other. But everything in the universe is moving away from the point of the Big Bang at considerable speed.
Okay. Kelly, I'm going to let Rob respond to this in a little, but I'm going to have to get to the next caller. Where can we find more information on you, Kelly? Are you writing a book, or what are you trying to promote? Anything, or just wanted to come on?
I'm not trying to promote anything. I teach philosophy and evolutionary biology at Clemson University, and if people want to talk to me about this, I'll be happy to do so.
Oh, well, and your last name, just so for the people, just so they know for sure, yeah. They can look you up.
Kelly Smith, Department of Philosophy and Religion at Clemson University in South Carolina.
Well, I appreciate you calling, Kelly, and I have your email address, and I'll call you whenever I need you for other types of things, because I have an educational talk show 7 nights a week on Blog Talk, plus a couple terrestrial shows. So I'd love to have you on again, okay?
Okay.
All right. Take care, Kelly.
All right. Bye.
All right, Rob. Thanks. Response really quick, 2 minutes before our next caller, 352.
Yeah, again, we're back to the same problem, and it is a problem. I mean, now we're kind of going into philosophy. I mean, what is reality? I don't want to show any disrespect. I mean, he's good at him to come on here, but again, you're just making stuff up. So now you got these rubber balls flying around in space. Where did water come from? Where did DNA come from out of these rubber balls? I mean, forget, you know, the questions are endless. This is a philosophy. They're just making stuff up. There's no reality here. We come very close to the philosophy / religion argument. And what is ultimate reality? I mean, we can sit here and make up anything we want, basically, from what I've been hearing the first, 40, 45 minutes that we've been on the air already. I've been to the Smithsonian in New York. Every time a supposed evolutionary fossil shows up, it's huge news. Like this thing, and what was it? Google last year had the whole thing, and that turned out to be a hoax. This Archaeopteryx that's supposed to be a bird to a dinosaur, or a dinosaur to a bird, that turned out to be a fraud. Every supposed link of fossil, Lucy, Neanderthal, Nebraska man, the drawings of Haeckel, which are still shown in biology textbooks, so you can still Google them. Which shows a human, a fish embryo, you know, in the womb, which is utterly ridiculous. These people are just making stuff up, and I don't know what else to say.
Okay, Rob, guess what? We do have 352, and we'll see if they can respond to this. 352, welcome to the Total Education Show. Now, do you want to respond to Rob, because we're just jumping in this debate, and you were listening in queue. What's your response to what he said from Kelly's response and his rebuttal? How do you want to respond to that?
Well, I'm actually not a PhD, but an MD. But, you know, what I usually tell people when they say they don't believe in evolution is, then why do you get a flu shot every year? This is a classic example of evolution in real life. Viruses and bacteria that become increasingly resistant to antibiotics that we have, viruses that mutate, and every year we have to come up with new flu vaccines because of these mutations. This is evolution in real life. So going back to some of the other points you made, though, Archaeopteryx, which is how that's pronounced, that's a transitional species. There are many transitional species, and again, I'm an MD. I'm not an expert. But we do have to study a lot of these things in science. I was a biology major. There are a lot of transitional species in the horse lineage, for example, Eohippus, Mesohippus, Myohippus. You can see these, as Kelly pointed out, in museums such as in Museum of Natural History. Whales used to have ancestors that had legs, Ambulocetus, Rotocetus. They've now established that whales and other sea mammals actually were animals on land. How do they know this? Because when you look at the skeletons of these animals, they have hip girdles and they have primordial bones that were originally legs. So why do whales have hip girdles? Why do men have nipples? Why do humans have non-functional third eyelids? Why do we have tailbones? In embryology, why do humans have gill slits and tails during development?
Great question. Okay, respond to that, Rob.
I don't know where to begin. I mean, so viruses are proving evolution. There's so many questions I could ask. I don't even know where to begin. So how about this one? Why did evolution stop? I mean, the survival of the fittest, shouldn't it be an ongoing process? Shouldn't we be seeing, instead of arguing about, you know, what exists and what doesn't exist in the so-called fossil record, I mean, shouldn't we be seeing, like, you know, half-legged whales running around, can't figure out if they should go into the water or stay on the sand, or, you know, how they survived in the survival of the fittest? You tell me. I mean, if we evolved from apes or orangutans, you know, why are we still around and they're still around if it's survival of the fittest? And if we evolved from bacteria, I mean, human brain came from a bacteria. I mean, again, you're just making stuff up. I mean, where do you draw the line with this?
You know, I guess what I would answer is, if I'm making this up, then a lot of people are making up exactly the same things. And most of the advances in medicine today are coming in the field of such field as molecular biology. And this is a direct result of the increasing knowledge that we have in evolution. As Kelly pointed out, that, you know, nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution. So, like a lot of scientific theory, and I thought he had a great definition of what a scientific theory is, because a lot of times people who are non-scientists will say, well, that's just a theory. But that's not what a theory means in science. So when you see a bunch of facts and you put them together, you come up with a theory, you start to look for more facts that support that theory. And more we're finding that things that are happening in medicine are being supported by evolution. This has even progressed to the point where last year the American Academy of Medical Colleges started looking at where there are weaknesses in curriculum. You know, if we're going back to the argument of why this should be taught in school, they're looking at weaknesses in the curriculum of students coming into medical schools, and where they're finding serious weaknesses is in evolution. Because this seriously impacts the knowledge of medicine. And so what they have recommended is that evolution needs to be taught to undergraduates, and it should be a prerequisite. So I guess conspiracy theorists can say, well, all doctors, all scientists, all physicists, you know, we're all in cahoots and we're trying to pull a fast one. But, you know, again, science isn't trying to prove any one agenda. It's, let's look at the facts. If someone comes up, you know, with a better model, then a true scientist should look at that. But if I take the cell phone out of my pocket and I don't understand exactly how it works, it doesn't mean it's magic. And it doesn't mean that a scientist didn't develop it and there's not physics involved and electrical engineering. It just means I don't understand it. So, you know, humans have an innate need to try to explain things, and that's probably where religion came from. If we don't understand something, it makes us feel better to think that there's a higher purpose, and maybe there is, but that's theology, and you can't teach theology in science because it's not science, it's theology. So maybe there's a higher being, but that's not something you can ever prove or disprove because that's not science. Science
okay.
can only prove or disprove things that are scientific.
Are fantastic. Basically, anything to promote, websites, anything, or you just wanted to come on this debate tonight?
I just wanted to come on. I mean, I've got a website on medical practice management, but that's, you know, not related to this.
In education, go ahead and promote it if you want.
Yeah, well, it's medicalpracticetrends.com, and it's for online resources for practice management for physicians and practice administrators. But the evolution is just, again, a lot of people in medicine are this is an interest. And now in medical schools, as part of the curriculum, they now are teaching formally evolutionary medicine. So they're not doing that to promote any agenda. It's just it's a critical part in advances in medicine today.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for calling the program. And you did provide something that I didn't know, how important evolution is to be taught based on medical. So I want to hear Rob's response to that. I will just put you on mute as we're waiting on 408 is in the queue, and we're going to put him on the line next. But Rob, your response, but thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Well, okay. Thanks for coming on. There's a couple things. First of all, the theory. As I said, look, the ultimate truth. Again, we're walking on the fringes of religion and creationism and God here, but he mentioned theories. Okay. Now, a theory in science, you want to do your best to be able to prove it. It has to be scientifically valid, or to maximize its scientific validity, it has to be provable, i.e. Newton's laws of motion or the first and second law of thermodynamics. Okay, that's why they're called laws and not theories, because for all intents and purposes, they have never been observed to not be true. Okay, and this is why we're still calling the evolution the theory of evolution. We can't seem to get away from that word, but the point being is that with a theory, or with a scientific law, it has to be reproducible, and it has to minimize assumptions. Okay, and also I'm getting here, as I keep getting, I don't care how many medical schools are teaching, so-called evolutionary medicine. You're teaching assumptions based on assumptions. The times keep shifting, the story keeps changing. Now whales came from the land into the sea. I mean, I've heard evolutionists say, well, we evolved from the fish, so that the animals came out of the sea onto the land. The story keeps shifting. It's assumption based on assumption. Okay.
No, the second thing,
he brought up the cell phone. Well, yeah, a lot of intelligence and design went into that cell phone. So that cell phone didn't come from a random explosion, and it didn't evolve just like the human brain, which was much more complex than a cell phone. It didn't evolve from hydrogen or ether or chaos or the Big Bang or whatever.
All right, let's see what 408 has. 408, you're on with the Total Education Show. Response to Rob's last point after the doctor had a point. You're on the line.
I called in to argue on the pro-evolution side, but after listening to the doctor, I would actually want to argue with him, because I took issue with almost everything he said. I've created a documentary film called Beyond Me. You can view it at beyondmefilm.com. And basically, most everything he said, I really don't agree with. In my film, I've created a new model. Rob had said that there's no new models out. I've created a new model of evolution that bridges the gap between science and religion and incorporates reincarnation in a way that's really never been explored before. And you can't really prove reincarnation. It's impossible to prove in a lab. And yet it is a missing link in the model of evolution that explains how certain information is passed along from generation to generation, from species to species. And so, you can scientifically prove the existence of God. It's just you can only do it within your own mind. I really wish I had a notebook taking notes on all the things he said, because I probably took issue with at least 15.
Okay, very interesting. Rob, you have a voice in the wilderness crying out on the show. What do you say about that?
Well, I mean, I don't want to respond, but I thought we were going to stay away from religion. I mean, he's obviously referring to the Eastern religions, the concept of reincarnation, Hinduism and Buddhism, which is fine.
Well, I was actually referring to Christianity. Jesus taught reincarnation. I'm actually a Christian, and I was talking about Jesus' teachings. So try not to cast me as a Buddhist or a Hindu, please.
Okay. Well, what is Hebrews 9:27?
I'm a Christian. I'm not a Jew.
Oh, the Book of Hebrews in the New Testament. What Hebrews 9:27? What does it say?
I have no clue.
It is given to man once to die and then to judgment.
Who wrote that?
Well, the Book of Hebrews in particular. It's in the New Testament. The author is unknown, but it's there.
So that's your basis for your life, a book that you don't even know who wrote.
In that particular chapter, it's not known, but every other chapter is known. You can believe in reincarnation. That's fine. I don't
believe in anything.
Okay. Okay. All right. So what do you? I don't know what to say to that.
So, you know, okay, so here's the question for 408. Now, I thought you again were probably going to debate Rob, but now you're debating Rob on Christianity. What type of Christian are you, 408?
I would be considered a Gnostic Christian.
Okay, very interesting. And now we're really touching upon some stuff for another time. Are you're there, Rob. You're still there, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Gnostics, I mean, that's its own religion. I mean, you can call it whatever you want, but it's not Christianity. But that's
excuse
fine.
Excuse me? Wait, excuse me?
Gnosticism? We can have this another night, but Gnosticism, that's not Christianity.
Why don't you email me and you could debate Rob for that sometime? Because that's for another time, but we could definitely do that 408. So send me an email. Did you find me on Reporter Connection or Hara? 408.
You had me. You told me to email and phone in at 7:51 or 10:51.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got my email address, and I would love to debate this. My next film actually is coming out in about 4 weeks, and again, these films can be found at beyondmefilm.com. Rob, I recommend you actually watching my film. You might learn a few things. The next one's coming out in about 4 weeks, and you can get on the list there and be notified when it's coming out. And the next one's going to be very enlightening, for sure.
Okay, this is a different type of Christianity. I'll do some research on it, but again, I know what Rob's going to say, but we'll definitely set that up as a matchup, okay? Okay,
sure.
All right, take care.
All right.
See ya.
Bye.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for coming on. Bye.
Now, Rob, what the heck was that?
I'm not so sure. It was definitely a shift. But I can tell you, when you start talking Gnostics and Gnostic Christianity, it's not. Like I said, you can call it whatever you want, but it's not biblical Christianity. I mean, Gnosticism or the Gnostics is the knowledge that man can become God. And very simply, if you go, that's the original lie told in Genesis 3, ye shall be as gods. I mean, that's foundational in Gnosticism, and reincarnation is absolutely not biblical. Like everything else we're debating here tonight, I mean, you can believe whatever you want to believe. I mean, you can believe that a human brain evolved from ether or something can explode in infinite smallness. An atom can explode and turn into every galaxy in the known universe and beyond, because we don't even know the extent of the universe, as these gentlemen are trying to convey here tonight and call it science. You can believe whatever you want to believe. And now we're getting very close to that philosophic religious debate, but that's really where this is going. I'm not a complicated guy, and I'm certainly not an astrophysicist. That I admit. Okay, as I've stated, and for people that are listening, my background is civil engineering, and above average academic background. Certainly nothing to write home about. But I just can't believe what I'm hearing tonight. I mean, none of my questions have really been answered. I'm just getting the runaround. I mean, why did evolution stop? Where are these half-legged fish running around and these bird dinosaurs?
Rob, because again, I think that the frustrated teacher wants to call in, because again, he might be somebody that would be interesting. If he doesn't call in a minute, we're gonna say adieu and good night. I have some to make it through for tonight. But basically, the point Rob I'm going to make is this. Yes, they haven't brought up a lot, except maybe the black hole. And I think that you need to bring your guy, Steve. I need to bring Steve's guy, because this guy's big. And we have a knockout, drag-out debate next month. And I guess we got to talk about this atheist debate as well. Did I just call him an atheist? Oops. I mean, agnostic.
He's a Gnostic, but
Gnostic.
You know, that's
very close to an agnostic. Am I the way you're speaking? Wouldn't you agree?
What's that?
I said agnostic. I'm going to do some more research on Gnostic. Okay, so whatever he is, that will be an interesting debate, Rob. But
I'm sure it will be.
Oh yeah. So basically, Rob, I guess TFT's not going to call in, and that's too bad. But I guess for another time, another place, another situation. Where can we find more information on you, Rob? And we're looking forward to some more opportunities to bring you back on the Total Education Network.
All right, my website's boxofsunglasses.com. And for people listening out there, I'd say the most important link on that website is probably God's Simple Salvation Plan on the homepage. And I am switching some things around on that site, and I'm going to try and get these interviews posted on there, and I'm working on that. But again, that's boxofsunglasses.com. And also take my No God Allowed Evolution Challenge. There's a link on there. And you can read as to the evolution at your own pace, or what the theory really says, or what when you take it to its logical conclusion of where evolution leads, and it's not pretty. But that's obviously, you know, that's more of a historical debate. My books are available, and everything's there. So radio shows, I got a couple of radio shows. There's information there. Tuesdays through Fridays, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm on the Geo Media Network, geomedianetwork.com, and there's another show on there, more of a religious show, Beast 18, on a V channel, V as in Victor, channel.us. So all that information is there at boxofsunglasses.com.
Well, Rob, thanks for coming on, and I really thought it was an interesting one, and you held your own again. But for your belief, no one's won yet because they have not proved you wrong in your belief. And that's why I hope to get two on two, get a judge, and I know who the person is going to be. It's Jeff Deutsch. What a man he is. And you'll find out about him if you could Google search him. He would call it down the middle for the debate, and I would completely think he would be the best judge. So have a great night, okay?
All right, Neil, thanks a lot, and we'll talk offline.
Absolutely. And Steve has been listening in, and Steve's ready for you next month, okay? All righty, take care, guys.
All right, Steve, thanks. Good night.
All right, good night. What a great show. Let's finish up with my buddy, and it's E with Shadow Dancing. Thanks, everyone, for listening tonight.
Hey, baby. I know you're not scared. Can you come on over here? Let's do the shadow dance. I was chasing your direction. I was telling you no lies, and I was loving you. When the words you say, baby, I lose my head. I was chasing your affection. I was doing you no harm, and I.